Welcome to True Gay Crime, a mini-sode. True crime in half the time. Remember to subscribe and like if you're listening on YouTube, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and to tell a friend about True Gay Crime. And if you're able to, supporting on Patreon helps to keep the show alive. The link to my Patreon is in the show notes or in the description on YouTube. As always, the sources for this episode can also be found in the show notes or in the description on YouTube. Today, we cover the story of how an All-American football player at the height of his career comes crashing down. What happens when fame meets murder? This is the story of Aaron Hernandez. True Gay Crime contains coarse language, adult themes, and content that is violent and disturbing. If at any time you feel you need help, please refer to the toll-free crisis lines in the show notes. Aaron Hernandez is born November 6, 1989 in Connecticut. He plays basketball and track in high school, but really excels in football and enjoys championship success. During one football game, he's knocked out cold and the ambulance is called. It's his first knock to the head, but not the last. He's described as someone who smiles a lot, is kind to everyone, makes people laugh, is self-deprecating. At home, things are not great. His father makes life hard for the family when he comes home drunk, hard for Hernandez, hard for his brother, and especially hard on his mom, whom he is often violent with. He's described as the man of the house, homophobic, and someone who would slap the faggot right out of you. Despite all this, Hernandez looks up to his father, who has also been a star athlete in football himself, a man nicknamed The King. Now, since the seventh grade, Hernandez is close to fellow classmate Dennis Sanssouci, and according to Sanssouci, the two are inseparable, best friends. But more than that, the two share a secret. They can't tell anyone else, especially their homophobic fathers or anyone at school. But who would ever guess the high school quarterback and tight end were more than just friends? The two hang out after school, experimenting with each other, and according to Sanssouci, he was only one part of Hernandez's sexual activity at the time. The shame, the denial, the secrecy, no one would ever know. For better or for worse, at 16 years old and in his senior year in high school, Hernandez's father passes away during a routine hernia surgery. And come university, Hernandez makes a big decision, and instead of going to UConn like his father and his older brother, he becomes a star tight end at the University of Florida. He's a bulking guy at 6 foot 2 inches, 245 pounds. He's got the qualities needed for success, the size, the breakaway speed. He's only 18 years old, and the pressure to succeed is crushing. His teammates line up, pants down, to receive shots of Toradol, a painkiller that allows these young men to play through whatever pain and injuries they sustain, affecting their long-term health, all in the name of glory and money for the school. At school, he plays with future superstar Tim Tebow, and the two go out to a bar in Gainesville called The Swamp. Hernandez is underage, but is served 2 alcoholic drinks, and when he's asked to pay the bill by the manager, Hernandez, believing they should be free, gets angry, punches the manager so hard that he bursts his eardrum. No charges are laid, and Hernandez rightly feels like he can get away with anything. No consequences for the football star. Another incident, this time a shooting in a car. The report describes a man fitting Hernandez's description as being the one who pulled the trigger. No charges are laid, and nothing concrete is ever proved. The message here is, you can get away with it as long as you excel on the football field. During his time, he also gains 15 pounds of size and starts getting his body tattooed, which, according to Sanssouci, was perhaps a way to hide his sexuality, mask his true self, deny his past, and fit in with the hyper-masculine and toxic environment of not only football, but Florida, and the religiousness of his teammates and coach. He's one of the most talented young football players in America, there's no question. But during a routine drug test, he fails. That, along with behavioral concerns and scoring the lowest possible score on social maturity, and NFL teams are weary of drafting him after that. Off the record, teams are also concerned about Hernandez's association with gangs back home, namely a convicted and violent drug and arms dealer named Alexander Bradley, a lifetime criminal who sold Hernandez his weed and with whom became a close friend. Because of all the red flags found by private investigators working for the NFL, Hernandez falls to the fourth round picks in the 2010 NFL draft. But the New England Patriots do select him to join their team. Unfortunately, being drafted to the Patriots means he's only a two-hour drive away from his home and those shady characters. He's now the youngest player in the NFL and sets a rookie record for tight ends with 45 catches, catapulting the Patriots to an impressive record and snatching an AFC championship berth. The next year, he helps spearhead an unstoppable New England offense, helping the team go all the way to the Super Bowl. At 22 years old, he even scores a touchdown in the Super Bowl. For his contribution, Hernandez gets a 5-year contract extension with the team, but football comes at a cost, a physical one, and Hernandez is no exception. Play through the pain is the motto of the game, but more than once he sustains injuries to his head, some forcing him off the field. CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, is a brain disease triggered by constant hits to the head, a degenerative brain disease that can lead to memory loss, depression, and dementia. Fast forward. A young man is jogging home from the gym in North Attleboro, cutting through an industrial park, when he notices something out of place. He approaches the lifeless form and calls 911 for help. The body is identified by police as belonging to 27-year-old Odin Lloyd, who was shot to death, execution style. Further investigation finds that Odin Lloyd was dating the sister of Aaron Hernandez's girlfriend. He's only 23 years old when police lead him out of the house in handcuffs. He's shirtless, so the cops pull a t-shirt over his handcuffed arms and bring him to the Bristol County House of Corrections. This look, the t-shirt pulled over cuffed hands with the hands behind the back, becomes known as Hernandezing, and people start to post pics of themselves on social media in that pose, and it goes viral. Throngs of fans chant "innocent, innocent," and "we love you" as Aaron is being driven to the jailhouse. Fans struggle to believe their hero is a murderer, saying they won't turn their backs on him. He enters his 7x10-foot jail cell, quite a difference from the 7,100-square-foot mansion he woke up in this morning. But he takes to his new routine like a fish to water, getting out of his cell twice a day, framing it as not being in jail but at training camp. Back on the outside, hundreds of people attend the funeral of Odin Lloyd, shock and confusion as the question, why? Why would someone want Odin dead? Friends and family of Odin are concerned that his death will be overshadowed by the celebrity trial and the star power of Hernandez. Because of his fame, the news cycle is packed with updates about Hernandez, including interviews with his famous teammates, Tom Brady and Tim Tebow. Outside the courthouse, the media throng wait in anticipation for a glimpse of the famous man accused of murder. Inside the courthouse, Hernandez pleads not guilty. The prosecutor contends he conspired with two accomplices, Ernest Wallace and Carlos Ortiz. Also, Hernandez's cousin, Tanya Singleton, is accused of helping the men escape the scene. Tanya is a 38-year-old mother of two dying of breast cancer. When she takes the stand, a headscarf is wrapped around her bald head as she refuses to testify against her famous cousin, choosing family loyalty over civic duty. Tanya is the only person Hernandez truly trusts. He doesn't even trust his mother, as we know from recorded prison phone calls where he accuses his mother of being untrustworthy and even going so far as saying, "There are so many things I'd like to talk to you about so you could know me as a person, but I never could tell you, and you're going to die without ever knowing your son." Sitting in the courtroom for the trial are two sisters, Shania Jenkins, who was dating Odin Lloyd at the time of his murder on one side, and Cheyenne Jenkins, her older sister and the fiancée of Aaron Hernandez, sitting on the other. Cheyenne is mother to Hernandez's baby girl, and when the chips fall, she sides with Hernandez in the trial over her own sister. In life, the sisters are close, and because of that, Hernandez and Odin are thrown together. But the two men have a couple important things in common. They both love football and weed. So while the sisters are upstairs at the house, the two men are down in Hernandez's man cave, bonding, smoking weed, playing video games. They eventually become close friends. The prosecution and defense build a timeline for the jury. June 16, 2013, Hernandez sends a text to Odin at 9:05 p.m. telling him he's going to visit him at home that night. Hernandez then texts his accomplices, Ernest Wallace and Carlos Ortiz, and picks them up in a rented car. The three men drive to the home of Odin Lloyd in Boston and pick him up. It's after 2:30 in the morning. They drive for a bit, but Odin senses something is off and gets a bit concerned, so he texts his sister. The text reads, "Do you know who I'm with? NFL, just so you know." This after 3 a.m. Then they drive to a secluded part of North Attleboro where Odin is shot 6 times. There is clear footage of Hernandez pulling up in the rental car with Wallace and Ortiz at the exact time it would have taken to drive to the industrial park, shoot Odin Lloyd, and drive home. But it gets worse. The cameras inside his home show Hernandez pacing through his mansion holding the gun. Is it the gun that killed Odin? This was a sloppy murder, to be sure. The body is found close to Hernandez's home in an area that is not known for violence, and Hernandez is the only person Odin knows in North Attleboro. Not only that, there are cell phone pings and CCTV photos placing Hernandez at the scene of the crime. There's footage of him buying rolling paper at a gas station, and later police will find a blunt next to Odin's body, and DNA from that blunt matches Hernandez. The rental car he uses for the crime, he returns the next day with gun shells still in the car. Tire treads in the mud, text messages, shoe imprints, fingerprints. The evidence is overwhelming. But the question remains, why would someone who has seemingly everything going for him, athletic ability, success, money, get involved with something like this? And more importantly, who pulled the trigger? The owner of the New England Patriots, Robert Kraft, comes out to say, quote, "If this stuff is true, then I've been duped, and our whole organization has been duped." During the course of the investigation, Hernandez's family troubles come to light. Turns out, only months after his father died, when he was 16 years old, his mother, Terry, starts sleeping with Hernandez's aunt's husband, the aunt being Tanya Singleton, who refused to testify against Hernandez. So Tanya's husband leaves her and moves in with Terry in the Hernandez household. Tensions rise in the house, and Hernandez starts spending more and more time with his aunt Tanya over at her place. Without the supervision and discipline of his father, Hernandez is exposed to some shady characters. In fact, that's where he meets his accomplices, Wallace and Ortiz. Because of the investigation and now Tanya's involvement, police get a search warrant for her house, and what they find shocks them. Stashed in the garage is an SUV that the police have been searching for and is linked to a double murder from 2 years prior. Two men, Safiro Furtado and Daniel Diabru, not drug dealers, not involved in gangs, are stopped at a stoplight when someone in an SUV reaches out the window and shoots them point blank. With zero leads and no motives, the case goes dry. This is when Tanya takes the stand, but she refuses to answer questions to how the SUV got into her garage, and the woman with advanced breast cancer, a headscarf wrapped around her bald head, and oxygen tubes in her nose, goes to jail for refusing to comply. But convicted drug and arms dealer Alexander Bailey, whom sold Hernandez his weed, testifies to selling him a gun. Not only that, he tells the story of he and Hernandez going to a club. A drink gets spilled by accident on Hernandez, who starts to fire up. Bailey suggests they leave to cool off, but later in the evening, he says they see the guy who spills the drink on his buddy driving from the club. Hernandez says, "Let's go." At the light, Bailey testifies that Hernandez yells, "Yo," to get their attention, and unloads 5 bullets in their direction. And when he's out of bullets, only the clicking sound of the gun as he continues to pull the trigger. If all of this is true, then a month later, and after killing 2 men in cold blood, Hernandez would be awarded a $40 million contract by the unsuspecting Patriots team. If all of this is true, after murdering 2 men, Hernandez will go on to play an entire season of football. Alexander Bailey, the convicted drug dealer and arms dealer and Hernandez's close friend, takes the stand to tell us about a trip the 2 men take to Florida together. The two go out to a strip club called Tootsie's. In the club, Hernandez sees 2 men he decides look like cops. Bailey says, quote, "If they are cops, it's because of the stupid shit you did in Boston." It's now 5 a.m. The men drive home. Bailey falls asleep in the passenger seat. When he wakes up,
The car is parked and there's a gun in his face. It's Hernandez, and he pulls the trigger. In the morning, a man on his way to work sees a body in the parking lot, calls 911, and Bailey is rushed to the hospital, where he survives. And it's in the hospital he calls a shocked Hernandez and says into the phone, "What's up?" A voice from beyond the grave. When police question Bailey at the hospital and ask who shot him, he refuses to answer, instead wanting to get revenge for himself. Hernandez knows what Bailey is capable of. He knows he has guns, he knows he has a crew, so he goes home, puts up heavy surveillance cameras, buys guns, and starts to form a crew of his own. Tanya's acquaintances, Wallace and Ortiz, who become like bodyguards. He's so afraid he even asks his coach to be traded to a different team. The answer is no. He's too valuable a player for the Patriots. An alternative solution is presented where he gets his own place, somewhere other than his house. So that's what he does. Hernandez moves out of his McMansion and into a tiny apartment by himself, away from his fiancée and baby girl, essentially going into hiding. He's on his own now and left to his own devices. He's communicating less with his family, with his fiancée. His father is long gone, and he's not hanging out with members of the Patriots. He's smoking and hanging out with career criminals. Fast forward to June 14th, and Hernandez goes out to the club with his friend Odin Lloyd. Something happens at the club between the two men, something that changes the course of the entire story. That something is the thing we may never know, but it's the reason Odin is now dead. Witnesses say Hernandez suddenly acts strangely towards Odin, moves away from him, and stares at him angrily from the bar. And then, as we already know, 2 days later, that fateful night, a text from Hernandez to Odin. Let's step out for a bit. Having heard all the evidence presented, the jury deliberates for a full week. For Hernandez, no news is good news. The longer the verdict takes to get to, the more the press compares this football star to another one who was in a similar position, O.J. Simpson. Finally, the verdict comes in. Murder in the first degree of Odin Lloyd, done with extreme atrocity or cruelty, giving him a life sentence. He spends the next 2 years in the Shirley Maximum Security Prison in Massachusetts waiting to be tried for the double murder in Boston, during which time his most faithful companion, his Aunt Tanya, passes away from cancer. Back in the courtroom, this time being tried for the double murder, the only person there to support him is his fiancée, Cheyenne. To help prove motive in the double murder, since the existing motive of "these guys spilled a drink on me in the club, so I followed them outside and shot them in the car" is a weak motive, the prosecution uses Hernandez's own words against him. In recorded prison phone calls, he repeatedly talks about being angry all the time for internal and personal reasons. Later in his brother's memoir, he would describe a situation where Hernandez is sexually assaulted by an older boy, and Hernandez is known to have asked, "Do you think someone is born gay?" But ultimately, the court dropped the gay angle to avoid a salacious trial. Aaron Hernandez is found not guilty of the two murders in Boston thanks to the defense putting doubt in the minds of the jurors of Alexander Bailey's character, his story, and his own involvement that night. Things are looking up for Hernandez, who talks about appealing his murder conviction and talking about starting a new life. That is until April 17th, 2017. A radio show airs discussing Hernandez and the Odin murder. The host of the show and a guest reporter claim that Odin walked in on Hernandez in a compromising position, and that's why he's murdered. To keep the secret. They go on to laugh about Hernandez being a tight end on and off the field in a very disgusting and dark homophobic tone. 2 days later, Hernandez is found dead in his cell. He's hung himself and written John 3:16 across his forehead, a reference to eternal life. Permission is given to study Hernandez's brain for signs of CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Did I say that right? Encephalopathy? Encephalopathy. The brain disease that can lead to depression and dementia, violence, and poor decision-making. Results show that for a 27-year-old, he has the most advanced case they've ever seen. Quote, substantial damage that took years to develop. And so ends the violent and traumatic story of a fallen football hero turned murderer, Aaron Hernandez. Yowza. So I was going back and forth with this one thinking, is this a true gay crime? But after watching the Netflix show about Aaron Hernandez, which I suggest you go watch because it's very complete and very well done. His friend from grade school, Sanssouci, you know, talks about them having a relationship and them being sexually active together. And although Aaron Hernandez is not here to, I don't want to say defend himself because that sounds like, you know, being gay is something to defend. But, you know, he's not here to tell us his gay side of the story. So we can only take somebody's word for it and make our own conclusions. He had him struggling with some sort of sexuality. There was something there. And that's why I decided to cover this story because, you know, it doesn't always have to be about out and proud people killing each other. That sounds weird. But you know what I mean? Was he gay? Was he bisexual? Did he even know? Did he even want to know? And then they study his brain. He's got CTE, which is a real thing that players get when they smash their helmets together and their brains, you know, get all fucked up. It screws you up, your decision making, it makes you angry. If you're already prone to, you know, instability in your brain, and you're hitting your brain around, and you're struggling with your sexuality, and you're surrounded by these hyper-religious, hyper-masculine, toxic people, I mean, and you grew up in a household with a father like he did, and. But I'll leave you with this one thought. We still don't actually know why he killed Odin Lloyd. There's no doubt he was part of it, whether or not he pulled the trigger. But he was there. He was part of it. He wanted Odin Lloyd dead. Why? His fiance's sister's boyfriend, whom they hung out with, they were friends, they smoked together, played games. What happened between those two that was so bad that he wanted him dead? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments if you're listening on YouTube. Otherwise, I will see you in the next episode of True Gay Crime.
Did you know you can subscribe, rate, and review True Gay Crime on Apple Podcasts? It would mean everything to me if you did, because it helps me create content you like, and it lets Apple know to share it with more people. Thank you for listening. And remember, always look behind you, lock your doors, tell someone where you're going, and look out for each other.
Why can't we all just get along?